This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hadfield. Joining me this week are Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back. Sam Claiborne.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be back.
and Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Got a great show for you this week. We're going to do some imagination play, sort of imagining what sort of video game mashups might be fun to play if they were ever to happen in our dreams. We're going to flip through the May 2002 issue of GamePro. But first, very surprising news this week that Square Enix is selling off its Western Studios, Eidos, Crystal Dynamics, and Square Enix Montreal to the Embracer Group, which is a mysterious shadow organization in Sweden that over the past years has secretly been just gobbling up franchises and studios left and right. I think now that they're going to have over 850 different franchises and IP under their umbrella.
Oh, it's crazy.
Formerly Nordic Games, formerly THQ Nordic in 2019, rebranded as the Embracer Group. So a little bit, it's the Embracer Group itself might sound random to be the new home of these studios and of franchises like Tomb Raider. And I think the fact that they, are making this acquisition for the mere sum, the paltry sum of $300 million. It's also surprising, but we'll get to that. I think, hear me out. I think this represents the end of a chapter in the story of video games. I think it's bigger than just this acquisition.
What's the chapter called?
Ooh, that's a good. Maybe it'll be the headline of this video. Japan raids again. Which is, of course, a play on the second Godzilla movie, Godzilla Raids Again.
Of course.
Which is interesting to think of what Godzilla is doing as raiding, isn't it?
Yeah, I've never heard that title, actually. That's how they promote it in the United States, Godzilla Raids Again.
I don't even know. It may be the actual Japanese name, too, released. Because it wasn't Godzilla 2.
There's definitely an expectation that he's taking things, right, if you're raiding.
Yeah, but I don't... No, lives. He's taking lives. I don't know if that really counts. Doesn't fit our definition, the WoW definition of going on a raid, does it?
No.
Yeah, he needs buddies for that.
Yeah. Well, he does have buddies, but not in that movie.
not yet.
Anyway, the end of a chapter for video games, if you'll allow. And I believe this chapter began in the mid-2000s when the Japanese gaming industry was experiencing what gamesindustry.biz called an existential crisis. I like the way they put it, where there was a fear that Western audiences, their tastes were moving away from Japanese games. At, you know, in the time Grand Theft Auto
eventually Assassin's Creed, your Call of Duties, your Halos. These are the games that were really starting to blow up in the West. And Japan needed Western audiences because at the time, the console industry in Japan was shrinking as everyone was doing their gaming on handheld devices and then eventually on phones. When I started IGN, we went to Tokyo Game Show. There are lots of console games on the show floor, but today, Tokyo Game Show feels like a mobile gaming show. So Japan needed Western gamers. There was a feeling that as the audience broadened into a little bit more casual territories, people playing Madden and FIFA and Call of Duty and Halo, they weren't interested in traditionally super Japanese games, your Final Fantasies, your Dragon Quests, weirder stuff like what Beautiful Joe and Brave Fencer Musashi. So Japan had to appeal to Western audiences. In 2009, Square Enix acquired Eidos, and that got them both Crystal Dynamics and IO Interactive. So that was their play, Square Enix's play for, you know, Western talent and hopefully Western audiences. That led to a renaissance for Tomb Raider and Deus Ex and Hitman, all of those series. Very well received by critics, considered to be commercial disappointments by Square Enix, even though, I don't know, when you look at the numbers, when you see that the original Tomb Raider reboot in 2013 sold 3-some million units in its first month, went on to sell 14.5 million units, I think it's like, that sounds pretty good. Not to Square Enix. They were struggling with, like, you know, Final Fantasy went through a weird dip through the Final Fantasy 13 years where they were three different Final Fantasy 13 games that were sort of mixed. You know, they received mixed reception at the time, although I think it has its defenders today. Anyway, eventually they landed on Final Fantasies 14, 15, and 7 Remake, and they had Nier Automata. And I think it's like they feel like they got their groove back and they're like, nope, we're Japanese games are successful again. We don't need these Western studios. Here you go. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yeah. I mean, they've never felt like a part of, like, if you pick like a picture of Square Enix games in your mind, like, yeah, it's Final Fantasy, right? It's never been Tomb Raider, even though they were a part of, like, you know, the Square Enix corporate family for almost as long as they existed independent of it.
Yeah. I don't know if this is still happening. Square Enix was publishing Call of Duty games in Japan for several years.
Well, so that my comment would be, like, related to that then. I that's an interesting, I must have known that in the back of my mind too. But, like, they it seemed like Square Enix wanted to change their business and not be a game developer alone, but be like a worldwide publisher and have, you know, be a force in publishing, which meant they were buying Western companies and publishing Call of Duty in Japan and stuff like that. Like, that's just like a, you know, that's like a diversification of their business and an expansion of it. It seems surprising that they would go back on that, unless it was, you know, some dragging unsuccessful part of their business, or as you're kind of alluding to, if it's a part of a larger philosophy about the success of their own development studio games, like, that's interesting. But, like, so it's just, it does seem like the parallel to them is Embracer Group, right? Like, Embracer Group is doing what Square Enix did in 2009. So it's like, why is that appealing to Embracer but not to Square Enix? That doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
I mean, I honestly, like, you know, Embracer Group, it's a joke, but kind of not a joke that they've bought everything and everyone, right? But they seem to be, they don't have like some unifying corporate strategies. They seem to kind of just buy them and then let them do their thing and make good games, hopefully. And, you know, match up like old dormant IP that, like, as part of the Square Enix acquisition, everyone's talking about, like, you know, Deus Ex and Tomb Raider, but they bought like 50 IP, right? So it's like the joke that is maybe not a joke is maybe Embracer would, like, let someone else make a Sleeping Dogs game, for example, whereas Square Enix didn't really seem to have any interest in pursuing things like that. So they seem to be, they're not like a top down, like, we're going to enforce our corporate culture on you and this studio is now going to make games the Embracer way. Like, they kind of just seem to be enabling game development so far. But it's still pretty early days, especially for them to have grown so big and so fast. So, you know, I don't know, like, we'll see how that evolves over the next decade or so.
Yeah, that's the interesting element of it is, like, you know, Embracer has been kind of unknown and kind of quietly for what a lot of people, not that they're hiding information, just it's been like slightly less visible because Embracer is not this very well-known public viewed company that has a lot of like press and marketing behind it to where the audience really is familiar with it. We even published today, like, who is Embracer Group? and a timeline of some of their acquisitions that Damon so elegantly really quickly recapped for us. So it's really impressive to see that like suddenly they're coming on people's radars, because it's difficult to ignore how many studios, how many IPs they now own and are responsible for. And even in their press release, which, you know, Justin, to your point, like we'll actually see in practice how this goes, but seemed like they were kind of alluding to like, this is our operational model. Like we're very hands off. We're about empowering developers to do the best that they can possibly do and not getting in the way of that. And like the underlying not so subtle message is, you know, traditionally in these Japanese markets, there might be more oversight. You know, there's a tendency towards a little bit more involvement alongside the developers. So who knows, maybe this is a good thing for the studios actually, and a good thing for games. And maybe Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will be made and do better than the first game, because that game deserved more than it got.
Yeah, I mean, like those two Marvel games were kind of a disaster for Square Enix, right? Like, so this Western arm of their business is kind of distressed in a way where Avengers did not turn into the games as a service hit that they wanted it to. And Guardians is an awesome game, as we've talked about on Scoop repeatedly, but was almost immediately discounted to $20 and just was not the commercial success that they wanted it to be either. So, you know, they're a little bit of like maybe a distressed asset. There's rumors that Square Enix itself is interested in being acquired. So, you know, maybe spin off these portions of the business that are not a fit for their core Japanese business and make themselves more more palatable to, you know, a Sony or someone like that might be looking to acquire them.
Yeah, I mean, it's well known that Square Enix has not been satisfied with the performance of these games and studios. But still, $300 million, like, it just seems insanely low, right? Like, you know, I just some like quick and dirty numbers that I ran. The original Tomb Raider sells 14.5 million units. Even if those are at half price, that's like around $415 million. Like, but that's only one game that they, you know. So I don't know how it makes sense that all these studios and this talent and these franchises are worth $300 million. Lara Croft has to be in like the upper echelon of like household names of video game characters, right? Mm-hmm.
I think it's on the higher scale of what any of Embracer's acquisitions. But if you look at it, relatively speaking, like Gearbox alone was above that metric, like 300 something million.
Really?
I forget the exact number. Yeah. Like, and that's Gearbox alone. Yeah. But, you know, they're not exactly going to be hitting these profits immediately. I think they said something in the press release that they're anticipating like at least a 2-year runway before those studios are pumping out their new games and making profit off of that too. So it's definitely like that's the future investment plan. So we'll see if Embracer does better than Square Enix does with it or had done with it.
Yeah.
There's one more wrinkle to Embracer, which is they bought. So in the board game space, there's been consolidation for a long time. And this company, Asmodee, did like an Embracer thing. They bought 1,000,001 board game makers. Mm. They own the company that makes Carcassonne and Pandemic and Twilight Imperium and Agricola. And Asmodee bought everybody. And it's been quite this anxiety inducing thing in the board game space. And then Embracer bought them.
Oh my gosh.
So Embracer owns Asmodee. They bought them for $3 billion. And it's overwhelmingly, like, I don't know what percentage of the board game industry it is, but it's like a huge chunk of it now rolls up through Embracer as well. It's like buying
Milton Bradley in 1980.
Yeah. 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 It's really nuts. And you know, like, I don't know, like, I'm just as I play board games a lot, but I don't follow the industry the way that I do gaming. So I can't speak to whether it's been good or bad for business, but man, half the games on my board game shelf are now owned by them for sure.
And then in case anyone didn't also know, Embracer owns Dark Horse Comics. It's the Dark Horse Comics label.
It's crazy.
They made their start in the comic book industry, actually, way back in 1990 something.
When it was Nordic Games, I think started by
Embracer, like, started out in the comics industry, and then they started to acquire like smaller, and that's why it's not been on people's radar as much. They acquired smaller games companies, and it wasn't until THQ and that acquisition where I think that I would assume that that's the company acquisition that made it on most gamers' radar from that point. Like, okay, here's this random like parent company holding company name Embracer. Let me ignore it. Oh, wait a minute, they've acquired Gearbox, and like suddenly Square Enix selling half of their very desirable from a critical point of view games. That's really the where they've been being put on the map.
Yeah. I have some other examples of Japanese developers making a play for Western audiences and then sort of coming back around to their roots. Capcom in the mid-2000s was experimenting with such failures as Dark Void, Bionic Commando, the 3D one, Resident Evil 6, although it's, you know, I think it's like the best, one of the best selling Resident Evils for them, but not a beloved game by the fan base. But then came, you know, their biggest hit ever, Monster Hunter World. Traditionally, like before that, there wasn't a more Japanese series than Monster Hunter. And then they've had huge success with Resident Evil 7 and Village and the remakes of Resident Evil 2 and 3. They've come back around to their Japanese roots. Konami was experimenting with crazy stuff like Never Dead. Who remembers Never Dead? Castlevania Lords of Shadow 1 and 2. They tried to do the Rock Band thing with Rock Revolution. And they outsourced 5 Silent Hill games to Western studios. Recently, they found success just re-releasing their old Japanese games and compilations like the Castlevania Advance Collection.
Very old games.
Yeah, they're old games. Sega acquired Creative Assembly in 2005. That's the Total War studio, I believe. Who remembers Golden Axe Beast Rider? That was developed by a studio in San Francisco. They also bought 2 Point, the developer of 2 Point Hospital. Yeah. But somewhere along the line, they acquired Atlus. That got them the Persona series. They had a huge hit with Persona 5, super, super duper Japanese. And now Yakuza is a very successful series worldwide. And then Namco Bandai, they, you know, before they had FromSoft and before they had, you know, the Soulsborne success story, they had Enslaved, good game, not a huge success. They had Splatterhouse, the 2009 remake. They outsourced a whole Ridge Racer game to a Western studio. So that's why I believe we've come back around. That's the end of the chapter of Japanese studios not having confidence that people around the world want to play super duper Japanese games.
Is the title of the book History Repeats Itself, the video game edition?
Yeah, it can be. Maybe.
Sure. Ouch.
Anyway, I hope this means good things for the future of Tomb Raider. And, you know, there's no new Deus Ex game announced at this time. There's certainly no new Legacy of Kain game announced. That series has been dormant for 2 decades now.
Ooh.
But hopefully the new era of Crystal Dynamics and Eidos underneath Embracer is a bountiful one. Let's pull up. Let's go back to May 2002 in GamePro magazine. May 2002 issue of GamePro, Medal of Honor Frontline on the cover, a game which I think reviewed well, but I don't think is remembered. It's just not remembered at all, right? It's not really a game that gets talked about a lot. They only get 12 cover stories a year, so I'm always surprised when it's a game that isn't really talked about, when it seems to be a forgotten game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Medal of Honor went like neck and neck with Call of Duty, but then eventually just got bodied by Call of Duty and it sucked all the air out of the room.
So jumping into it, the first thing we get is this bizarre ad for Fresh Games label, which as you can see is part of Eidos. Speaking of Eidos down the corner, dope new releases straight from Japan. And it's hard to tell because the box art is super small, but this is actually an ad for Mr. Mosquito and Mad Maestro on PlayStation 2.
I have Mad Maestro's on the wall right behind me right now. That's amazing. One of the games that's been on display for a while.
Okay, so I remember Mr. Mosquito. What is Mad Maestro?
It was a rhythm game, a PS2. Like in that era, I was buying and playing all of the weird, bizarre, you know, rhythm and music games that came out. Frequency and Amplitude, and which they weren't that weird and bizarre, but just, yeah, all of them. That was my jam.
Well, this is a 2-page spread for that's really an ad for 2 games, but the games are so minimal here. It's hard to even tell what this is an ad for. I just think, so Eidos Interactive had its own like imprint that was going to publish Japanese games. I just don't remember that being a thing. But I remember Mr. Mosquito. E3 2002 is where you want to be. This is how to be there at GamePro.com. Ooh, I bet Pear was very cross when he heard that. Just an ad for Smash Court Tennis. Does this look like a comfortable way to play video games in your living room?
No, that's like That's like when you get so into it and you're like when you play a drive racing game and you're liking the direction you're trying to drive into, even though that actually does, you know, does not control your game input. That's how I see that. But no, I'm never playing that way.
I do often stand up if I'm playing a particularly difficult section. Mm-hmm. But this dude's not
really.
He's like on his 2 feet, but he's hunched over like a hunchback.
Does anybody here play tennis?
Particularly difficult.
Have any of you ever played tennis or a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I played tennis in high school and I played a lot. This is what you do. This is a ready position in tennis. So it's tennis.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind
that
of
makes more sense.
When you're waiting for a serve, you're kind of hunched over, ready to do a forehand or a backhand and react really quickly.
Nice.
Well, I don't think this is.
And it's actually the only way I play video games. So.
Ah, okay.
Lay off.
Hunched over.
Standing up. Hunched over at the ready.
Look, if you're going to be playing video games for hours on end, you got to get your workout in somehow, right?
I don't like the shoes on in the house.
Yeah, he is wearing shoes, but also the
carpet.
That shag carpet. The shag carpet is not period appropriate. 2002. No.
Mm. I think it's awesome. It's
I mean, yes, awesome. Yes. Period appropriate. No. Okay. So in the editors, the letters section, we got a letter, agree to disagree. I just finished reading GamePro's 2001 Editor's Choice Awards, and I must say that I'm very disappointed that Major Mike is the only editor who listed Final Fantasy X as his number one game. I can understand that Final Fantasy X would not be the number one pick for everyone, but it should have been well within the top three. Final Fantasy X is an amazing game that does everything right, from its 40-hour plus enthralling story all the way to its addictive gameplay. Unfortunately, most new games focus on nice graphics at the expense of gameplay and length. Thankfully, Final Fantasy X is not that type of game, and whether you like RPGs or not, it's a must-play and own for everyone. Even if you don't like RPGs, it's a must-play and own. It may be a long time before a game of this caliber comes out again. Is the Major the only one who realized how great this game really is? I don't know GamePro enough to know the personalities there or who the Major is.
I don't either, but it is one of... I frequently cite it as my favorite game of all time. I've played it several times over. I still have a paperback guide for it that I parsed through many times. I've leafed through and brutalized that book. It's an incredible game. And the graphics are incredible on top of that.
Do you agree?
Does it all.
Do you agree it's a must play and own even if you don't like RPGs?
I don't know about even if you don't like RPGs, because some people just cannot connect to certain genres, and I get that. It was kind of like the Forza arguments. What was it last year?
Yeah.
People saying it's like an incredible addition of that series. But if you just can't get into racing games and you don't like racing games, I don't think that it can overcome that personal taste.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like, you know, it's like, oh, this is the best pizza ever. Try it. And if someone's like, I don't like pizza, like the only reasonable response is like, okay, you don't need to like,
I'm actually lactose intolerant. No, you must eat this. This is the best pizza. Like, it's difficult to overcome that.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. This is a letter from Greg Skittles Walter. What is with the Nintendo power cords? Every single one is a huge box. With the NES and SNES, there was this big black box that plugged into the wall. The N64's big black box plugged into the system itself. And now at the GameCube, the big black box is right in the middle of the power cable. What is the point of having it? The PlayStation, Dreamcast, and Xbox don't have it. Is it like an electrical thing so the system doesn't blow up or something?
Yeah, they didn't know about power supplies back then.
Well, so did somebody answer the question?
I mean, yeah, but I thought maybe Sam could answer it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of copper winding in those in the transformers to get them down to, you know, 12 volts out of your wall power of 120 volts. You got to just run something through it, basically a giant long power cord. But if you have a system with those built in it, there's a heavy corner of that system because they're still in it. It's still doing that.
Yeah, it is put
in. It's just like it's outside of it. And what's, you know, the good examples of that are like the PS3, right? It's like, sure, it's got this little power cable that you plug into it, but like that thing's the size of a George Foreman grill and much heavier.
Yeah. The huge, like the PS3 and the Xbox 360 is a really good generation to compare because it's such a cheat. Like the 360 has this huge external power supply and it's like, all you did was take this thing and take it out of the console, but it's still like the same volume and heat generation and weight and all that stuff. But you just shove it behind your TV instead.
And then, especially with the 360, Xbox was very particular about telling you should plug it directly into your wall, not into a power strip. Are these issues related?
I don't know.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember why they would say that. And that could have been any number of like surge protecty things. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I know it probably indicates that it draws a lot of current because if you draw a lot of current from the same wall socket, you know, like things can get hot. It's not a great idea, but like, you know, I never heard about Xboxes failing that way. They failed in one other way a whole lot.
So this is May 2002. Does anyone remember when Sega announced it was getting out of hardware? Had it already happened?
What year? So 2002?
Yeah.
They made, you know, their first GameCube games like right around then.
Because we got an email. They got an email from someone who's not happy about seeing Sega characters on other platforms. It says, did Nintendo, Sega, and Sony just merge? I just want to know why Sonic the Hedgehog, Spyro the Dragon, and Crash Bandicoot are on the Game Boy Advance, a Nintendo platform. I just don't get it. All three of these companies are supposed to be rivals, and Sonic just doesn't belong on the Nintendo game system. Same goes for Spyro and Crash. What's next? Will Mario be on the PS2? Would Zelda be on the Dreamcast? Or are Jack and Daxter next to hit the GBA?
That's great. Wait,
wow.
But I feel like if Sega had already made that announcement, then it wouldn't be surprising that would happen, be happening.
Yeah, but these are little kids and they're reading magazines. And they have no idea what's going on.
It's kind of incredible because the conversation today is the like diametric opposite of that. It is like we want more accessibility across more consoles and across more platforms and have everything be free reign. And let's do, you know, these mashup fighting games with a bunch of crossover characters because that's fun. And let's also put every character from every IP ever into Fortnite.
Yeah.
I did not think of Spyro I know it is a PlayStation exclusive in hindsight, but I never thought of that as like some kind of like iconic PlayStation thing, that Spyro. Yeah. Like, I never thought about that. Mm.
And at this time, they weren't even owned by Universal. They weren't even Sony properties. Mm. Okay. In the news, the Game Boy Advance dropped to $80 from $100.
Good deal.
And apparently it was all because the system was struggling in Europe, so they're going to slash the price in Europe, and they're like, well, we have to slash it everywhere then.
Yeah, I mean, that was the GBA. That exact one pictured here is the one that I owned before I got the SP. What a great console.
Well, yeah, I mean, great console, but SP is like such an improvement, right?
Yeah.
And then GameCube goes arcade. Sega, Namco, and Nintendo announced in February an agreement to jointly produce Triforce, a new 3D arcade graphics board. So this was what would lead to like the Mario Kart arcade cabinets, right?
Well, I think so. An F-Zero too, maybe.
There's an F-Zero one?
The F-Zero one's earlier, I think, right? Sorry. But definitely Mario Kart.
Weirdly, I think these are in Soul Calibur and Monkey Ball cabinets. I think.
I didn't know there were Monkey Ball cabinets. I didn't know
Monkey Ball was an arcade game first.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Learned something here.
But yeah, the cart. See, the thing is, the only reason I know there's something there, and sorry, I don't know this era of history too well, but those cart games are a little bit, well, they're a lot after this. They're after Double Dash. And so, you know, I don't know if they would have been the same platform, but I remember this news story and reading this, like probably on IGN at the time, because I thought it was really cool.
And then again, of course, here's an ad for Crash coming to Xbox, and he's getting an Xbox tattoo. Yeah. The Bandicoot's running with a whole new crowd.
Oh, man.
He's holding, also Crash is holding a teddy bear, because I guess the, you know, tattoos can be painful. best-selling games. This is from January 2002. It comes from NPD, I guess, at the time. So best-selling games, January 2002, Grand Theft Auto 3, Final Fantasy X, NBA 2K2, Madden 2002, Halo, Metal Gear Solid 2, Max Payne, Agent Under Fire, which I think is a 007 James Bond game, and then March Madness 2002. And then Linux on PlayStation 2, what belongs to no one, increases in popularity daily and gives Bill Gates nightmares. It's Linux, the open source operating system OS that some PC users are utilizing as an alternative to the omnipresent Windows. What's more, Sony will soon unleash Linux on the PlayStation 2 in its latest move to expand the PlayStation 2's capabilities.
This is pre-Apple taking over. It's just like, it's really funny to like think about Windows being on everything and having Linux as this little contender. And Linux is still around and does plenty of operating systems.
I don't know what you would do with Linux on a PS2. Like, it wouldn't run your PS2 games. Like, you'd still have to boot into the PS2 OS. So
no, it's like it's using the PS2 to basically have like basic desktop features on your, if you have a keyboard and a monitor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, this is our static
section. Mom, I can do my homework on it.
Yeah, it's exactly. Worth it. So this is in their static brief news bit section. This is a little questionable. I raised an eyebrow at this. It says, if all goes well, by the time you read this, we should be straight into Compton. GamePro's offices are on the move to Oakland in a brand new shiny building.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know if they're moving to Oakland, but they are straight into Compton. Okay. Yep. What else is there in the... for any of you who still feel that copying a friend's game is a victimless crime, the game biz lost $1.9 billion worldwide last year. That's roughly 38 million copies of Grand Theft Auto 3.
What, to piracy?
Yeah. I wonder what that number is.
Can't even get Destiny for that much now.
38 billion? They didn't pay that much. What, they paid like $9 billion for Bungie? Yeah. Justin, Magic the Gathering, Wizards of the Coast is taking the world's most ridiculously popular trading card game online. Is this a new beginning or the end of an era? Which was it?
This is 2002?
Yeah.
Magic the Gathering Online still exists. It's still around. So there's multiple Magic Online. Like, there's Magic Arena if you want like a more casual Hearthstone, like I'm just going to open some packs and play Magic. But Magic Online is a different... It's like the most hardcore, if you want the exact same game you play on paper down to the letter, but it's just digital instead. That's what Magic Online is. Mm. And you can redeem, like if you get one of every single card in a set, like the new expansion, you can redeem them online and they'll send you paper cards.
Whoa.
I did it right here. I don't know if you're watching on camera.
Look at you. Wow. You saw they're ready to go.
Well, yeah, I've been waiting. This is my box of shame because I haven't put them in a binder yet. But for each new expansion, you can, you know, they'll take them out of your Magic Online account and they'll send you paper cards.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I can't believe it's still, I can't believe it's been around that long, 20 years. Goodness.
Yeah. And here's the ad for Crash going to Game Boy Advance. Crash is going small in a huge way. And they have a he's standing next to like car dashboard hula dancers to indicate he's become small now. Oh, there's an IGN .com quote. Handheld Crash.
That's what I was going to say.
Handheld Crash is just as awesome as his console adventures. IGN.com.
That's awesome. That.
Cool. Cool. So here's an ad for the R Zone only at Toys R Us. And can anyone tell me what R Zone mean? Why would the R in Toys R Us is just an abbreviated like slang version of the verb R?
Yeah.
What is the R Zone?
It's their personal zone of gaming.
I mean, is this for like big kids? Is this an ad that's like, hey, big kids can buy their games at Toys R Us too?
I guess.
Totally with Matrix inspired graphical design. And
01100101.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just trying to do like a weird sci-fi, you know, typeface for like X-Zone or, you know,
I get that.
Gamma Zone.
I'm just trying to break down it. The title, R Zone, it's the verb. Like, if you spelled it out like grammatically correct, it would be A-R-E Zone.
Yeah, this one would have to be, they're doing the other pronunciation, yeah. And I'm making this up. And this is the O-U-R, our zone.
Well, maybe. That would make more sense.
Right?
Damon, listen, if you're not from the R zone, you're not going to be able to understand the R zone.
So. I guess so. I guess the R zone's not for me.
First rule of R zone.
I guess the R zone's not for me. At the bottom, it tells what you can find at the R zone. Xbox, PS2, GameCube, PlayStation 1. Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color, controllers, Game Shark, power packs, memory cards, stat cards. What is that?
What's a stat card?
What's a stat card?
I've never heard of it.
I don't know what that is.
Stuff into a Dreamcast controller? I've never played a Dreamcast, really.
Unfortunately, I think all the R zones have been ordered up, so we're never going to know what the stat cards were. And here we go, Lame Pro. I don't know why this is their April Fool's edition. I don't know why
it's running. I really like this.
I don't know why they're running in their May issue.
I love every single one of these stupid jokes on this page.
So Lame Pro, this is their April Fool's issue within an issue. And they say, meouch, you've got your Sanrio surprise right here in Halo Kitty.
That's really good.
It's incredible. We all need a Halo Kitty figurine now.
And then there's some HBO games. HBO's making games like Gex and the City and Tony Soprano's Pro Skater.
I love it. I want to go back. You missed my favorite one.
Sorry.
They have Lord of the Rings Extreme Frodo Cross.
Yeah.
2002.
Yeah.
And just like a janky drawing of Frodo.
Yes.
With a very prominent foot, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hobbit feet. And then Twisted Sister Black is in there as well. And then,
sorry, go back one more time. I don't know if they just couldn't make their deadline, but look, it's in their May issue.
Yes, that's what I said. And April's crossed out.
Yeah, it's just like world's first April Fool in a May issue. I like, they're like, well, guys, what are we going to do? Lame Pro's not finished. Like, it's fine. We'll just do it next month.
Yeah.
There's more online, Damon.
I know. Find out more online. Nintendo renames country Game Cuba. Microsoft counters marketing move by annexing Xboxistan. It says, taking the console wars to a new level, Nintendo announced this week that it had successfully wrested control of Cuba for the purposes of its $100 million marketing campaign, dubbing the newly liberated country Game Cuba. Damn, this is way better than some crappy trailer tour across America, said Shigeru Miyamoto.
Sounds like him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's so stupid. I love it. Stupid.
Medal of Honor Tricky. I don't know. It's just a snowboarding Medal of Honor game. I don't know. Army Men Operation Clean Latrine, a new Army Men game where you have to clean the toilets. Let's see. Resident Evil Biobash is a collection of 25,000 mini games. Capcom versus SNL.
Oh, because there was a big reaction against mini games at this time.
Oh, is that true?
Mini games were very uncool, and had been shoehorned into many games, and people were really mad about Mario Party at all.
And in Capcom versus SNL, just wait until Evil Jill Valentine, Dante, Albert Wesker, and Maximo take on Saturday Night Live legends like Landshark, the Spartan Cheerleaders, Toonsis, and Belushi Samurai.
These are the actual cover stories. I didn't realize they're actually going into what was on the fake cover.
Yep. And then, of course, Lord of the Rings, Extreme Frodo Cross. And what I think is interesting is it just goes directly from their Lame Pro issue just into a review of Command & Conquer Renegade.
Oh. Yeah. No special joke section is over.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
They liked Command & Conquer Renegade. They gave it a 4.5 in fun factor. This is an ad for Lucky Charms Star in Moon marshmallows, which, you know, in 2002, I was not eating very many Lucky Charms. But maybe someone out there.
You won't believe your eyes. Lucky does it again.
A star appears when you pour on milk.
Wow.
What? I mean, I don't understand how it would work. How would that work?
It's like hypercolor, but for milk.
Oh, my God.
Is it a dissolvable section?
Yeah.
It just turns into a hole.
Yeah. How does every tiny little moon marshmallow have a dissolvable middle in the shape of a star? What kind of wizardry would make that?
You know, it dissolves in milk, sugar, and everything's made out of different types of sugar.
Mm-hmm. And us adults are looking at this ad saying, ha 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 ha, but I have an 8-year-old daughter, and if she saw this ad, I would have to buy this for her just to get her to leave me alone.
Probably.
Yeah. Previews. So I kept this in just to show how, you know, this issue is 20 years old. There's still games that are still being talked about, remade, re-released today.
Oh,
Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast preview, Hitman 2 preview. Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind, mm-hmm. Icewind Dale 2. I don't know if that one has ever been re-released.
Yeah, Beamdog did it with all the others, I think, right?
I don't know. Now, hot at the arcades, Sam, I don't think I know any of these games. The King of Route 66.
It's a dark time. Dark time for arcades.
The weird thing is that it wasn't a dark time for Japan. There should have been cool stuff coming from Japan.
Yeah, it's just there was no arcades, you know? So, like, where would it come to?
The King, movie theaters, right?
Remember, pinball was like basically the most life support it could be on at this point. Because after Pinball 2000, Valley Williams went away. And it was only Stern these couple of years. And what Stern games came out? Like Austin Powers, Big Buck Hunter, like these bizarre games you never see anywhere. And they're super janky with clip art. Like things went bad then. But they bounced back. Now we're in the golden age of pinball. The best era.
The King of Route 66, it says, is a sort of sequel to 18-wheeler American Pro Trucker. And it's like a sit-down cabinet where you drive big semi-trucks.
Yeah, I vaguely know Police 911. That's one I know.
This is Police 911 2.
Do you see that cabinet?
It's Konami. Yeah, it says it's a motion sensor shooter, which is kind of cool for 2002.
Yeah,
The Maze of Kings is something I've never heard of, but it says, no stranger to churning out successful arcade properties, Hitmaker of Virtua Tennis and Crazy Taxi fame is at it again with another shooting game.
Wow. I didn't know that developer name.
And then there's Jurassic Park 3.
Well, you've seen that one. I think that's like an environmental cab where you sit in it. And it's all silly.
Is that the one where you're like sitting in a Jeep?
Yeah. There's a lot of those, though. There's even a new one, which is really fun. There's a Star Trek Voyager one for you Star Trek fans out there.
Cool. There's a survey you can take to win an exclusive GamePro t-shirt, and this t-shirt is so lame. They should have made it LamePro for how lame this shirt is. It's just a gray t-shirt with the tiniest little GamePro logo in the center.
Look, we really love the shirt design. Please make the logo much smaller. It needs to be much, much smaller than this.
It's just
too
big.
I'd like to say it was the style at the time. I just don't remember.
Who owns the GamePro? Does anyone own the GamePro? Where I'm going with this is, Justin, if we could license this t-shirt and print it and put it in the IGN shop, I think we could sell 4 or 5 copies of it.
I think it'd be funny to print it with the 20 winners on that lower part looking all
That's jammed. Good. And also, Sam, isn't that 20 winners like the old arcade font?
Yeah, it kind
looks,
of is.
It looks like it to me.
And it's funny to me, too, that they're getting out 20 t-shirts.
I know. 20,
just 20. That's the big giveaway for this like consumer information that they can use. That's valuable.
I meant the old Atari font, by the way.
We have 14 million subscribers. How many shirts should we make and give away?
20.
20 is good.
Call it exclusive.
Well, the inkjet printer is going to be out of ink for that iron-on graphic.
An ad for Bloody Roar Primal Fury on GameCube. So it says,
Primal Fury
from the creators.
Dinosaurs?
Well, so it's not a dinosaur game. Bloody Roar started on PlayStation 1, and it was like a transforming into animal, humans into animals.
This is not Primal Rage. This is Bloody Roar.
Right. It says from the creators of Bloody Roar 1, 2, and 3. But like I was saying, this is a game where humans turn into animals and it's a fighting game. But in this ad, they're completely downplaying the turning into animals aspect of it. Yeah. It's just a female fighter. And then there's a wolf behind her right shoulder, sort of in shadows behind her. So I don't know.
I mean, fight like an animal.
Yeah, it says that. But yeah, I feel like that's like the whole concept of the game. I feel like they would want to show that. It makes it seem like they weren't confident that gamers in 2002 actually wanted to turn into animals and fight each other. I don't know. They have a review of Kingsfield, The Ancient City, which is notable because this is a FromSoft game.
Whoa.
For PlayStation 2.
I remember watching like a history of Friends FromSoft video a long time ago that mentioned this and a few of the other games. They're really interesting. It's like PC games they did.
They liked it enough. Yeah, this is for PlayStation 2. They gave it a 4 for fun factor. So this is, you know, still, I don't know what they made. You know, Demon Souls kicked off on PlayStation 3. So I don't know what they made in between this and Demon Souls.
They did. They made Armored Core, but they've been making Souls-like games since the very beginning, which I don't think is like that, you know, secretive of information now. Like now that the games are so big, people have dug into their history. But like these games have like illusory walls and all the esoteric stuff that's in the Souls games now. They never were not doing it.
Yeah,
which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, for sure. And finally, I wanted to include this in their code vault. There are codes for DVDs. So like Mad Max, the original Mad Max movie on DVD, there's a code you can enter to check out the cars in the menu. Oh. This is fascinating to me. And then they have one for Moulin Rouge for an extended Your Song scene, hidden bloopers and more. It says like on disc 2 at the main menu, enter the cutting room at the cutting room menu, highlight main menu at the bottom of the screen, and then press right or left. When you do, a windmill appears on the left side of the screen. Press enter and you can watch an extended Your Song scene.
Jeez.
It's insane. I mean, I definitely remember DVD Easter eggs, like, you know, finding hidden clickable things in the menus.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. For Mad Max on side A, also, I don't remember. I mean, DVDs didn't have sides. Just must be one, right?
They had two siders.
DVDs?
Yeah.
Is that true? I feel like I'm on crazy pills right now.
Yeah.
It says
on
side A, highlight special features, then press up. When you do, Mad Max appears at the top of the screen. Press enter. When you do, Mad Max turns blue and you are taken to a hidden menu, the cars of Mad Max.
Like, why? Like, why hide it?
Well, exactly. Why hide away your special features? Anyway, that is the May 2000. New issue of GamePro magazine. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, you can remember, you can always reach us at the email address GameScoop, just like Joe DiBartolo did. It says, greetings from gloomy and hip Portland, Oregon, where, as an illustrator, I have the luxury of listening to and watching old episodes of the show. I'm a returning gamer who took a couple decades off like a damn fool until December 2019. So he hadn't been gaming since the 90s, I guess.
Well,
when we bought a PlayStation 4 Pro, a few months later, I discovered your show and eventually began diving into the archive. I really greatly enjoyed the regular gang, and I'm glad to see that whenever you've had others join the show temporarily, they're always great too. In watching older episodes in the early 500 episodes pre-pandemic, it really hit home how bummed you must all be to not be around one another these past 2 years, since everyone seems really fun and funny. As someone lucky enough to work from home with my wife, who was an author, the pandemic didn't really affect our daily work situations, but you all must be missing that lively workplace in a big way. Anyhow, it's my first time writing in, and I thought it might be a hoot to give you a potentially fun topic to discuss. What games or franchise mashup would you like to see if you were each given omnipotence and a huge budget? As an example, I'll choose if I get to play in third person as Chloe Frazier from Uncharted in an open world Assassin's Creed type game that takes place in the world of Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. Naughty Dog would make it. What are your mashups? I imagine you'll at least be able to come up with something more creative than I just did. Hopefully that gives you a good jumping off point. Why is Chloe in the world of Wolfenstein? I feel like the writers are going to have a hard time justifying this. As with so many trivial decisions that I make on a daily basis, I'm going to leave this up to chance, the universe. I go to my friendly random number generator, and I have here the SNES Omnibus. This is for all SNES games A through M. So we're going to Frankenstein together a mashup game here. So Jim started with character. It's about 400 pages in this issue. So our character will be from page 244 of the SNES Omnibus. And that's going to give us a protagonist of, who will it be? 44. GP1. Sega, wait. GP1 is influenced by Sega's Hang-On. So it's a motorcycle racing game.
Okay, so we have a motorcycle driver.
You're a motorcycle driver.
Okay. Cool.
The next one was the gameplay style, I believe. That's going to be found on page 329.
I hope it's an RPG.
The first motorcycle driver RPG.
It's just Days Gone.
That's true. Motorcycle driver is in a type of game that is The Legend of Zelda. So it's Zelda-like. Okay. You're a Zelda-like.
Motorcycle driving Zelda-like.
It's kind of starting to sound more and more like Days Gone again. So the setting, it's going to be found on page 344.
Give me zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, this is great so far. It's like you're upgrading. You're getting new upgrades for your motorcycle. Lets you access new areas of the map.
Like you can eventually jump over little rivers and stuff or run through a wall with a boost.
100%.
The setting is Madden 94.
We were doing so good.
So you're a motorcycle driver in a Zelda-like game. But the setting is like football. So you're a football player who rides a motorcycle in a Zelda like.
But here's what's good is that there's football fields in almost every environment you can think of. So you can have a lot of different open world areas to explore.
It would have to be football levels, and then it could be different stadiums from different cities.
The stadiums could be like the dungeons.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. There you go.
And then maybe you play football on a motorcycle, like that robot, like Mutant League Football,
or even before Mutant League Football. What's the cyber arcade football game, Sam?
Hardball or something? No. Cyberball?
Maybe it's Cyberball. Yeah. The final detail Jim provided was the developer, and on page 103, the developer is Electronic Arts.
Cool.
So Electronic Arts is delivering this game where you're a football player who rides a motorcycle around a Zelda-like adventure going into dungeons in different football stadiums.
Do you think EA has ever done a Rocket League?
Has EA ever done what?
Oh, I was saying, has EA ever done a Zelda-like?
Good question.
I don't think so.
We'll do one more. Okay, so our protagonist is found on page 347. It's a game called Magic Boy. You know this game, Sam?
I can picture the art for it, but I don't know what it's
from
about.
From JVC. Okay, so our protagonist is a magic boy in this game. Yeah, page 12. This will be early.
It's common protagonist type in video games.
Yeah.
Love it.
The game type is on page 12, Three Ninjas. Okay, Three Ninjas Kickback. So you're a magic boy who is a ninja? Or what was this type of game? What game was this? It's a side scroller.
You're fighting ninjas.
Okay. It's like a platformer brawler. You're a magic boy in a brawler platformer, and the setting is on page 105. That's Kakoma Knight in Busyland.
You lost me there.
Similar to Ultimate Kicks for the Genesis. It's a Kicks-like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But a puzzle game.
Yeah, but this Busyland is going to be the setting. So I don't really know what Busyland is like. This is from Seda, the publisher.
It sounds geometric.
Yeah.
Up until then, you were describing Ghost of Tsushima.
That's true.
Finally, kind of a magic boy.
This game is going to be made by Konami.
Out of the park. They're really good with their magic boys.
Good feeling about it. Thank you for being such a good sport on that really stupid segment. That brings us to Video Game 20 questions.
You're thanking us for being good sports?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a choice.
But still, you still have my thanks.
Does Alucard count as a magic boy since he's Jack Dio's son?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We'll make it Alucard. Our 20 question suggestion this week comes from Cheesy in Pokey, Idaho. Let the questioning begin.
Was this video game developed in Japan?
No.
There goes that meta.
Mm-hmm. Would you describe this as a spooky game?
No.
Did this game come out in the 90s?
No.
Is this game part of a series?
I guess technically, but it, you know, for all intents and purposes, it could also be no. Technically.
Like a spinoff or
it's not Mega Man.
Sequel.
is this available for the Nintendo Switch?
No. That's 5.
Is it a platform exclusive?
It was. Wait, well, you mean like today?
At launch is a good way to do that, right?
Yeah, at launch.
At launch, yes.
Well, was that a PlayStation platform?
No.
Oh boy.
Was it a Nintendo platform?
No.
Wait, didn't we ask that question already?
No.
Just if it was on Switch.
Oh, okay. So Xbox?
Or PC or mobile or something weird.
Or Sega.
Mm-hmm. It's true. we don't know if it's 80s or 2000s.
Nope.
We can do whatever.
Go for it.
Did this come out after the year 2000?
No.
Oh, wow. All right. We are barking up the wrong tree then.
Yeah.
Xbox would have been a difficult exclusive for that.
But also not Nintendo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it could still be PC, could be Sega.
Was this exclusive to a Sega platform?
No, that's 10.
Oh, great. Cool. Atari?
Arcade, maybe.
Arcade.
Mm. Was this an arcade game?
Yes.
There we go. Wasted too many on that
one. I know, geez. Did this come out before 1983?
Yes.
Okay. That's good.
So it'll be like one that we all know and recognize.
I mean, you know, so that like Centipede.
Yeah. So we asked the Japanese question, right? So it's
not. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Good call.
No. The Centipede was developed in America.
Right.
Yeah.
By Donna Bailey at Atari.
Oh, so it could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a couple you can go space. You can go bugs.
Yeah, I know. There's some eating.
Yeah, eating. Does it involve? Is it about food?
Yeah. Ms. Pac-Man was developed in America. Is this an Atari developed game?
Yes. Okay.
So Atari 80s. Atari pre 90s.
Yeah. Well, early 80s before 83.
Yeah. 483, so it could be, you know, Pong, I suppose. Let's see, how many questions do we have?
You have
can ask about controllers.
Six questions and a guess left.
Yeah, or sports.
Yeah.
Nothing that's obviously a series.
Well, okay. How about this? Is this game in color?
No.
Whoa. All right, that limits it significantly. We got Atari Football, Asteroids, Pong. Those would be the ones that people would, and some, you know, racing stuff. There's not much. Black and white Atari game.
Should we go with, did we name this game yet?
Well,
she just listed a bunch.
It's probably Pong or Asteroids.
Yeah. Is this a vector game?
Yes. It's 15.
Oh, cool. Okay. So it's not Tempest because that is that, but it also could be Battlezone. But Battlezone technically looks like it's color because it has a gel over it. Anyway, did you destroy Asteroids in this game?
Yes.
All right. Is Asteroids.
Great job. That was in 16 questions. Yeah. technically, there was, and I think an Asteroids like Deluxe. Asteroids Deluxe. I don't know if there was an Asteroids 2, but, you know, part of a series.
There's Asteroids right here.
Yeah. Asteroids is really, I feel like, you know, like Pong is an interesting historical curiosity, but it's not like a fun, enjoyable game to play in 2022. But like, if in my opinion, if you sit down and play Asteroids, like it's still really compelling and good. And the way your ship moves around is really good. Like, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Pong is really fun and compelling, especially that physical one we had.
I was going to say,
that
was like, a really cool one. The electromechanical Pong is super cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Asteroids, it really suffered from the, I can show you the, this little, the control panel for it. Mm-hmm. Get it framed up here. It's not a joystick, right?
Right.
So these are all buttons. So it's like, there's two buttons to turn left and right, and then a button to thrust and a button to fire and then a button for hyperspace. And the hyperspace button just warps you to a random location. So that control scheme, you know, if this is a joystick, a lot more people would have a lot more fun, or a twin stick shooter, right? With Asteroids. But instead you had to learn these kind of like NASA level controls for it. And I think that made it really difficult. Or it makes it really difficult for me. And another game of that theme is Defender. It's just, yeah. I'm not good at Defender, and I could be if I spent my entire life wrapping my brain around its, again, like panel of buttons that you know, with a single up down joystick. Like, it's just difficult stuff.
But Sam, they must have re-released it at some point with a different control scheme, because I remember playing Asteroids and it had like a trackball or a spinner,
yeah,
or something.
Maybe you played it in like a one of those collection cabinets at some point. Well, Asteroids, I mean, Deluxe is the same controls.
I would have played it in the early 80s.
I don't know. Maybe somebody hacked something together. I mean, Vectrex had a version of it. Did you play Vectrex?
No. No one played.
In Storm.
No one played Vectrex.
So rude.
Anyway, nicely job. Thank you for the suggestion. Cheesy in Pokey, Idaho. Viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. And that's going to do it for this edition. Game Scoop. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. I almost started in. That's going to do it for this edition of Next Gen Console Watch. Getting my shows all mixed up.
Different outros.
Yeah, I do have different outros and intros. Anyway, thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Justin. Thank you to Alan working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.